Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is K-12 Education Talk Radio. And here we go, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Sorry, my throat all of a sudden clogged up as I started to write. So I started to talk, so I'm sorry about that. So here we go. You ready? Excuse me. All right, no problem. Hey, I got my friends Mark Benigni and Barb Hafner here, and a brand new friend, the supervisor of blended learning, Susan Moore. They're both all they're. I'm telling you, I can't talk today. They're all over at the Meriden Public Schools. We're going to talk about how the progress, how they're doing progress-wise in spite of the pandemic, lessons learned, etc. I'll be able to talk in a few minutes. Considering this is radio, I do podcasts so many times. This is absolutely amazing this morning. I'm very tongue-tied. I can't understand why. Mark will help me. Okay, he's the superintendent over at Meriden. Hey, everything we do here is now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ACE-ED.org, and if you go over there, you'll be able to join with us. It's free to educators. It's the American Consortium for Equity in Education. It's all about equity, and that's what education's all about these days, and we're doing our damnedest to make sure every single kid gets the right and best education, all right, what they need to succeed, and I know Meriden is a big supporter of that sort of thing, all right, and we work very hard. We want your voice heard over there. It's free to K-12 educators. You'll see our magazine over there, which is called Equity and Access. We've had some articles in there from Meriden about what they're doing over there. It's our Champions of Equity issue, and you'll see one of the educators from Meriden Public Schools, Hector Cardona, okay, as a champion of equity. Congratulations, Hector. He will be on later in the month with us for a special show as we honor all our champions of equity, okay, but we work a lot with them, and we want you part of it too, okay, ace-ed.org, and I'm going to quiet down now because I can't talk. Let's see if Mark can help me talk, all right? Mark, how am I doing? I can't talk this morning.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
I can always talk. Yeah, you talk. I can't talk this morning. I'm very tongue-tied for some reason.
I can always talk, but with Barbara and Sue here, you probably want to hear from them more than me, and I'll tell you, I think everyone has been going through some challenging times here with this pandemic, but
yeah,
I do think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel here, and also I think we've learned a lot about education, and I think we're going to be better for this experience in the long run. And you know, I'm usually a pretty optimistic guy, but some of the things that we're seeing with education, I know, are going to help our students and lead us into the future successfully.
Well, you know, it's interesting to do that. By the way, hi, Susan. Hi, Barb. Say hello, ladies.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Okay. The pandemic, as horrible as it is, and let me just say how many people have died. We don't even want to talk about that. How many people are really sick and have lingering illness? Please, I don't mean to make light of that at all. All right. But what you just said is accurate, Mark. This opened our eyes to a lot of things. All right. And if we're able to learn from these things, then the pandemic at least will bring about some greater success in education and in other things for us, too. It showed us a lot of our shortcomings. All right. And there's nothing wrong with looking at that and being self-reflective and making things change. And I know you guys do that. And you're going to work with that for the next few years of what you learned through all this. And, you know, and Mark, I'll just ask you, you can start with this. Off the top of your head, what have you learned? And I have something. Wait, don't answer that question. As I said, I'm tongue-tied today. Are you ready? Don't answer that question. Okay. A very famous person now is a former employee of Meriden Public Schools. I almost forgot about this, okay? Now, I mentioned our friend, our champion of equity who works for you guys. His name's Hector Cardona. Do you know of anyone else who has a name similar to that who is even more famous than Hector, who is a former Meriden employee, a school employee? Can you think of anyone? I'm just curious.
I think just about everyone can, and we could not be happier for Miguel Cardona, the Cardona family, and the whole city of Meriden. I mean, this is just huge.
Cool.
And I think for the nation, they're going to get a public school advocate. They're going to get someone who believes in public education, and I think I'm looking forward to the good work he's going to do down there in D.C. And Connecticut's going to miss him, but I know that this is a job that he's up to the task for. And I think
it'll be great.
I think anyone who believes in public education can be very supportive of Miguel's nomination.
That's it. And is he still a Meriden resident? Do the family still live there?
Yeah, the family is Meriden resident. His son and daughter are in our school system.
Wow.
His wife actually works for us as a family school liaison. These are
Holy
well-grounded
Christ.
People, very connected to the Meriden community.
Are you three the only people in the town whose last name is not Cardona? Right, because you got Hector, you got Miguel, his wife. Right? This is so cool. And, you know, now you guys are good, but now you have to really be at your best because the U.S. Secretary of Education's kids are in your school district. You really have to be good at what you're doing.
We're going to do our best. That's all we can do.
We're up to the challenge.
I have a feeling you are. And if the kids get in trouble, they'll go, well, you can give me a detention, but remember my dad's Secretary of Education. You're in big trouble, you guys. You know, you got to be really cool. You know? How old are the kids? Without naming them, how old are they?
So his son is a junior, and his daughter is a freshman. And actually,
cool.
His daughter is good friends with my daughter, who's a freshman. And believe me, if something's wrong in our school system, I hear from my daughter Bria and my son Blake over and over again. Blake's in eighth grade and Bria's in ninth. So we need to fix it if there's a problem quick, because otherwise I'll deal with it not just at work. I'll deal with it at home as well.
Home.
So.
Right. That's fun. That's good stuff. I got to tell you, congratulations to the city of Meriden. That is really cool. And, of course, to Miguel Cardona. I mean, by the way, I just want to say this, and we're going to talk to ALAS, the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, tomorrow morning. Maria Armstrong, their executive director. But Miguel is the first Latino to become Secretary of Education, and with that incredible diversity in our school district, in our schools all across the country, it's really just so important. This is really huge stuff. So congratulations to Meriden. All right, let me get back to my question now. I almost forgot to do that, but I got to talk to me, Monk. What have you learned? And pass it over to the ladies if you want, Susan and Barb. But talk about all of a sudden we got hit in March. Okay, and it opened our eyes, and we had to react to stuff quickly. But now we've had 9-10 months to really look at this. Okay, what do you think we've learned? I'll throw it to Mark, and he can bring on the ladies.
Sure, I think I would just say we learned that it's not easy for anyone, students, families, staff, but it is doable. And I think some of what we learned is the prep work that we had been doing for years was meaningful.
Yeah.
And had value,
yeah.
And whether that was going one-to-one, having Wi-Fi hotspots, having digital content in place, a single sign-on, all those things became even more important when the pandemic struck. And then I'm going to turn it over to Sue and Barb, because they're the ones who actually do the work, as you know, Larry.
That's great. Susan's director of supervisor, of blended learning in Meriden Public Schools, and Barb, Director of Teaching and Innovation. Okay, so, and let me ask Susan, how long have you been there? I know Barb's been there since Barbara has been there since Ulysses S. Grant was president. How long have you been there?
You are correct.
Well, I'm not sure what that says about me, because I predate both Barb and Mark in the district. But I've been in this role for about 5-6 years now.
Wow.
It was really
cool.
You know, Dr. Benigni brought this role to the district as part of our digital transformation, and so I've been excited to be working and laying the foundation. But we certainly, took a hard look at the systems we had in place when all of this started, and one of the things that we really looked at were the support systems we had in place for our students and our staff and our parents. And so we added some features. So we didn't always have a technology support venue for our parents to go to, but we added that as soon as we went to distance learning, so that parents had a help desk where they could reach out if they had questions. And we did that both through our website and also with a phone number, because we know some families struggle with internet connections.
Oh, yeah.
And we also recently have added a Spanish-speaking technology person so that we can support all of our families.
Well, that's good.
So
did
that's
you use
been
one
a real
of the,
tea.
Did you use one of the companies that provide that service, or did you figure it out yourselves?
Well,
parent
sure,
community.
We have been.
Yeah.
For translation services?
No, no, not just for translation, but a lot of the school districts use the varied companies that are out there that provide the service for community school relations, okay, and back and forth. I'm thinking of like Class Tag and that sort of thing. Okay, and I was wondering if you guys came up with a system of your own or if you had purchased one from someone, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, no, so we are a homegrown system. So we have, you know, as Dr. Benigni mentioned, we have our own family school liaison department, of which Dr. Miguel Cardona's wife is a member. And so we've done a lot in Meriden with outreach to families specifically. And one of the things that we really focus on strengthening, you know, during our shutdown was making sure we maintain those connections and also making sure we have the support on the technology end for our families.
Yeah, and it's hard to do. And congrats, I'm sure, to your ed tech folks over there, who we haven't had on yet over all the shows we've done together, but I guarantee you they are very responsible for all this. I have to ask, and I think actually this might be for Barb. Barb, you're director of teaching and innovation, and you know we always focus on how the kids learned and are learning during this, but the teachers went through the hammers of hell to learn all this stuff. And I'm curious, okay, as you looked at this, and again, so few school districts had prepared for this like this, was there a lot of professional development involved for the teachers to make them feel secure with what turned out to be remote learning? Because most teachers haven't been trained in that. And a lot of them don't even know how to work. They didn't even know how to work a Zoom thing. I mean, let's face it, they're just people like everybody else. So what was it like for PD and all that sort of thing for the teachers and making them feel comfortable?
The biggest challenge was getting the superintendent up to speed, Larry. But after
Larry, that's a full-time job. The 700 teachers were no problem. No problem at all. So we're very fortunate. Prior to the pandemic, we were a one-to-one district. So students and teachers had access to the technology, and our teachers were technology users, so it wasn't all brand new to them. We had been working with them over time. Of course, once we shut down school, technology was used at a different level, and we were really aware that teachers were at different levels of comfort with their use of technology. So we did offer workshops virtually for teachers in order to enhance their skills, giving them the opportunity, for instance, they were using Google Meets with their students to experience a Google Meet as a learner and as a teacher. We do one-hour workshops after school hours. We're continuing to do them now since we have two environments running. We're offering PDs, individualized PD, through one of our consultants that we brought on who meets individually with teachers to help enhance their skills. We've worked with our vendors who have offered opportunities for learning for our teachers. We have video resources online, and teachers are learning from each other. They've been really great about working together, sharing strategies that are successful, sharing techniques that are successful. So honestly, for all of us, it's been a lot of ongoing learning. Some is very structured, and some is casual learning. And sometimes that's where you have your biggest learning curve, one or two tips that you could take to learn the next day. And, of course, our students are a wealth of knowledge. So whether it's in the in-person environment or it's distance learning, they're always willing to offer their tips and tricks on how to make something more efficient with the tools that we were using before but have taken them to the next level.
Right, that is really cool. And I'll tell you, the best hint that I got was a podcast I did with Kaplan, the education, the test prep people, okay? And they're used to working online, and the gentleman who was with me said one thing that teachers, again, you can pass this on and everybody listening, okay, is that think of the way you watch TV. And if the TV just had one guy talking to you with no change of the scene, or he had the same angle all the time, how boring that would be. Okay? So remember, he says to teachers, you're on screen. Change the angle every so often, like you're editing a movie. Okay? Get yourself on a profile. Change the angle so that people aren't looking at a static screen and just you talking to them. And I thought that was a great hint because we are on TV all of a sudden. Okay? And people have been trained to watch TV a certain way. So it's the weirdest year. I mean, it's just great. How'd the teachers do when all this was said and done? What are you hearing back?
So the teachers are doing, because they're not done yet, but they're doing fantastic.
Oh, no.
It's been a learning curve, and they
sure,
really have to stretch themselves like all of us had in many ways, but it's been very positive. They've accepted the challenge and really have implemented new teaching techniques, new strategies with not only their students, but with their families. They've been fortunate that they've been able to connect with families who were in the past were unable to come to school for whatever reason. They're connecting with them virtually now. And with phones in the hands of so many people, that has really helped make those family connections as well for parents and students.
It's really clear.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark. Please go. Mark.
Yeah, I think probably one of the things that we did right from the start was we gave the choice to families. So they made a decision whether they wanted in-person learning or distance learning as their primary learning environment for their child. And we had over 60% of our students come back for in-person learning. We started before Labor Day. While we have had to quarantine students, we've never shut down a school. We have 12 schools. We've never had to shut down a school. But we have had that about 40% of our students who've been participating in a distance learning environment. And I think some of the things that we've learned that through this process is that there's creative ways to engage parents. We will probably never do parent-teacher conferences on site unless it's requested by a parent. Our attendance rates for parent-teacher nights were so much better online
isn't
than they were
something?
When we're asking
isn't
parents
something?
To come to school.
Isn't that something?
We had
wow.
our first snow day, which was a remote learning day. We'll probably never call a snow day again.
Teacher
PD days, there's no reason. I can keep them at their house and let them do the PD from home, give them more choice and selection in
exactly.
their own professional growth from their home. So some of the things that we're learning along the way, we just need to be strong enough to make sure that we don't revert back to the ways of the past and we continue to move forward.
And you know, it's so interesting when you say that, because those things you're saying, we could do all that, obviously, before the pandemic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we never did, all right? And now that you look, this is one of the good things that's coming out. You look at it and you go, why didn't I think of this before, okay? Why didn't I think of this before, all right? And it's obvious and these things are working and we're just going to do that much better. I have to ask you, Mark, your community is very diverse, all right? And what about the equity situation, okay? Are all the kids okay with the hot spots? Are all the kids getting what they need? Some families don't have the broadband to have five kids, okay, on getting education at the same time at home. How did that all work out?
Sure.
It's the equity side, yeah.
Very well. So 77% of our students qualify for free or reduced price meals. 75% of our students identify as non-white. And 19% of our students are in special education programs. So when you talk about a diverse district, that truly is Meriden.
Yeah.
But we were fully one-to-one, so every student has their own device. We, in a partnership with the state and the state of Connecticut, did a great job here. They stepped up and made sure that Wi-Fi access was going to be available, and you could choose hotspots or you can choose internet providers. So we made sure that not only all of our students had a device, but they also had connectivity, which we said over and over again, it's always been less about which device and more about connectivity and access to digital content.
Yeah.
So I do think we're doing a good job getting the technology in the hands. Where we continue to need to go back is how do we support those students who aren't getting the work done, who maybe don't have a parent at home to help them or to nudge them to get the work done. What can we do as a district to make sure that we're continuing to engage those students who we know? And the metrics are so amazing. We know which students are online. We know which students are accessing their course content. How do we go back and make sure we re-engage them with the work?
Mark, let me ask you a question. And actually, Barb and Susan can answer this too. Education, the way we teach kids, okay, and correct me if you think I'm wrong here, please, is going to change. All right, we've learned that already, okay? And I'm curious, as you look to get future teachers, you know, teachers are going to retire, you're going to be hiring people. You talk to the education schools around you, like at UConn and Central Connecticut and all that sort of stuff, all right? I have to ask, what are you saying to the schools, now that we've been through this, the education schools, now that we've been through this, we're looking for quote, a teacher that's ready to teach in any kind of environment. All right, and is that happening? Are you seeing a change in the way teachers are going to be trained? And I'll ask Mark, and then you can pass it on if you wish.
So, yeah, I would say I think we are seeing a change. I think the questions we ask at the interview time, we're rethinking some of the questions that maybe are those standard questions. We also use, and I'll let Sue or Barb jump in, for our interview platform, we do have potential teachers submit videos to us, which I think are helpful. They're time savings.
Yeah,
don't bring someone here if it's not a fit for them or for us and waste more time. So maybe Barb or Sue can explain a little bit more about what we're doing with that.
So I think the district has been much more proactive in taking a role in building that future workforce. So we've done a lot of direct work with the preparation programs and providing opportunities here in district for people who are considering becoming teachers. So we're using we have a teacher development program here in the district that allows education students to come in and work in the district even before doing their practicum. We also have a future educator club for students, our students who are interested in going into the education career, and we're just starting a partnership with Ed Rising, which I'll let Barb talk to you about.
I was going to ask you about partnerships. What's Ed Rising? Go ahead, Barb.
So Ed Rising is a national organization that encourages high school students to pursue a career in education.
Oh, wow.
We're beginning that part. Yeah, it's fabulous. Great opportunity for students and a great way for us to support students who may be interested in the education field. And one of the nice things about it, it's a partnership with Ed Rising, which is a national organization, but it's also a partnership with one of the colleges here, which is Quinnipiac University. So our students are able to take a course at Quinnipiac while attending high school and explore public education, the role of the teacher in education. There's a club that is aligned with the program. So in normal circumstances, students would be in other classrooms learning from each other. But honestly, we've been able to get this up and going using a virtual environment for high school students to pursue a career in education.
The program, Larry, is run through Phi Delta Kappa, so PDK is the kind of sponsoring arm of Educators Rising. And the online tool that we're using for interviews is called Spark Hire. And it really, that's saved us a lot of time on our end, and I think it's been appreciated by potential candidates applying to the district.
Is interviewing better or worse now, Mark?
I'll tell you, in some ways, I still like that personal connection, but
well, you're
going to
make that
to
eventually. Yeah, but you're not wasting time with 40 people to hire one. You can talk and narrow it down to 12 people. Okay, it's got
no doubt. And I'd still say, even with the interviews, Larry, the candidates are finding creative ways to make those connections through a virtual platform.
Yeah.
Our best distance learning teachers still find a way to connect with kids through that virtual platform. So definitely learn a little bit about the candidate and how comfortable they are with technology, but also how creative and engaging will they be in a virtual environment. And we didn't stop hiring during the pandemic. You know, the hiring continued.
Well, you still have kids to teach, and you have teachers who are going to retire and that sort of thing. And your district grows, and you have to do that. Of course it does, okay? And actually, I want to ask you another thing, which has come up several times, all right? And that's about lowering expectations of student learning, all right? And this happened a lot last year, and I guess I understand it in the spring, okay, when we were all going through the hammers of hell. I guess you have to lower expectations a little bit, because as we learned ourselves. But there's a concern out there that school districts, and not Meriden in particular, just school districts in general, and teachers, lowered their expectations of what they expected from the kids because of the situation everyone was in. And that's a very dangerous thing, in my opinion, and we can't let that go on. I can understand certainly in an emergency. okay? But when you talk to your teachers or as you look at this, okay, do you still have the same expectations of learning, all right, from your students? Okay, let people say, oh, they lost a year of school, we can't expect it. But we have to get back on track and keep those expectations high. You guys are good at that. You produce good students. All right. Well, what's been the word on expectations? And again, I'll ask Mark, but anyone can answer.
Yeah, I think definitely in March, I think all of us, we huddled together and we said, how are we going to make this work? And
yeah.
I could see how some would think the expectations might have been a little bit lower there. But I could tell you in the fall, we were full speed ahead, and it was about not lowering it. How are we going to change and give students multiple ways to demonstrate mastery? So
Bingo.
We were going to, the bar still needed to stay there, and we're still using, whether the state or nation does a standardized test or not, really, we're still going to use our own internal system, which is iReady, and we're going to see how much progress and growth our students are making and compare it to past years. Because the last thing we want to do is have the pandemic mean that some of our students lost a year of learning. I wouldn't want that for my own kids in the system. I don't want that for any child who attends our schools.
That is wonderful.
And
by the way, thanks for mentioning iReady. The Curriculum Associates is good friends of mine. So I didn't know you were going to say that, so I'll just say it. Thank you very much.
They've been
a great
partner
system.
With
I
us.
I love those
too.
Guys. I love that gang. They're
the assessment window opens on Monday.
Right. We'll send you your code. What grade level are you looking for, Larry?
it's so interesting. I've been in a couple of conventions talking to teachers, and they'll mention iReady. It's really a very popular program. You guys are right on target with that. But kids rise to the occasion. All right, and I hope everybody understands that the more rigorous we are with kids, the more they will do better. Okay, and lowering expectations to, particularly in terms of a racial or ethnic or gender, is a terrible thing. Oh, girls can't do science. A lot of girls in here. Maybe we should lower our expectations. No. It's the exact opposite. Be more rigorous, and everybody does well. Okay, and the rising tide raises all boats. And to hear that, it's so important during these pandemic times. Okay, to make sure that those expectations we have of our kids are high and that our teachers are very rigorous, all right, with the kids, okay, and providing them with a rigorous curriculum. You'll be amazed at what the kids can do. I want to go over to Susan for a second. Susan, that was my rant for the day, by the way. Susan, okay, right, Susan, blended learning, okay, that's more and more important this year probably than ever, okay? All right, it's always been important, believe me, I understand it. Talk about how it works at Meriden and what you had to go through this year.
Sure. So, I think with the inception of this position, one of the things we were really looking at, we were all in person at the time. And so blended learning was really looking at how do we get teachers and to use technology effectively to enhance learning, right? You can have a Chromebooks in the classroom, but if they're not being used to enhance the learning and support student learning, why have them? It's no different
Thank
than a
you.
Piece of piece of paper and pencil.
Yeah.
So we really, really did a lot of work with helping teachers to understand that, to learn new strategies on how to support that student learning using devices. When, we talk about pandemic, we really now are at both ends of the spectrum where you have full distance learning students, and then you still have your in-person learners using the technology. And so the blended is really happening on the in-person end, right? We have teachers and students who are in front of each other, but they are still leveraging that technology to enhance the learning. Having the background of how to do that, of how to integrate the technology during instruction, was that foundation, was that important piece of the foundation that has helped our distance learning teachers and students to be so successful, because they were familiar with using online learning management platforms. They have some of the strategies. It's funny you mentioned the camera angles, but not just being a talking head. How are they drawing students into the learning using the technology? How are the students leveraging the technology to help them with their learning? So if a teacher records a lesson, the student can now go back and have the teacher with them 24/7 if they have a question, or I forgot what you said about that, and now I can go back and watch it. So it's really been a valuable tool throughout this whole experience that has helped both our in-person and our distance learners.
It really
Mary,
has. Go ahead, Barb.
And I'm going to add one of the other things that's really helped us with we've embedded digital content into our core curriculum. So students and teachers are using digital content every day. And Sue was huge in simplifying that process for the staff and students. We use a single sign-on product called ClassLink. So when our students log in, they're able to access everything that they need. And that was a real game changer when we had to close schools in the spring. There wasn't a question of how do I find my Google Classroom or how do I access ST Math or Imagine Learning or Reading Plus, tools that we use every day on a regular basis. Students were able to log on with one URL that we sent to the entire district because it's customized for their learning. Students and teachers were just able to continue with skills that they already had in place. And that's really helped move things along in the district prior to this current situation and as we move forward.
It's true. Who runs, I don't even know this, Barb, stay with me. Who runs ed tech in the district?
Oh, I'm going to say it's all Sue Moore.
Is it Sue?
I know who it's not.
Believe me, I know that. That's why I went to the ladies for that one. Okay. Susan, is it you? Do you run?
I have a rather large role in that piece, yes.
But normally I'd say a title of CTO, Chief Technology Officer. Yours is Supervisor of Blended Learning. But you're like the technology guru in the district?
She's being. Yes, it would fall to Sue. We have a technology manager who will handle some of the back side of the operation, but
it's
Sue's
Susan.
The one who
it's
will
Susan.
Connect the dots.
Okay.
Yeah,
Susan.
I take care
so
of the educational technology pieces in the district.
Instructionally, also.
And the technology manager reports to Sue and works. Sue works closely with the technology manager. So if there is a problem, I know who I'm calling, Larry. That's Sue. So.
Sue City Sue. So Sue, let me ask, and by the way, you guys, I know you've won awards from COSIN. Okay, good friends of ours again. Okay, and AASA, Mark, all about the stuff. But COSIN is the ed tech organization, all right, and, all about networking, et cetera. Susan, I got to ask you then, okay, with all of this, and this is a challenge everywhere, I'm going to say two words, both of which you'll know, okay, security and interoperability, all right?
Oh, and, both excellent words. I thought you were going to throw
good,
in data privacy,
I know
Larry,
another big
but...
word. I know another big word, delicatessen, okay? So that's big words for you, okay? But seriously, with security, this is key because this is something you I'm sure came up over the last 9-10 months, okay? The interoperability of your systems from afar, okay? And then also, okay, the student, which is the key thing these days, of course, the student security. Susan, talk about those two things in terms of what's been learned during the pandemic.
Well, I think, both are huge, Larry, so you're really right on top of it there. And
that's
with interoperability.
That's why I'm the host of the show, because I am so.
well done. I think the
Thank
interoperability
you.
Piece, we really needed to make sure that our systems do work well with each other. And as you said, now that folks are accessing those systems,
yeah.
away from the district, that became even more important. And so that is certainly something that we, when we are doing our EdTech purchasing, we're looking at very closely. And we have, in interviewing vendors, if that's something that their system does not offer us, it's not a product that we're going to go with.
Bingo.
So Barb
Bingo.
Mentioned some of our vendor partners before. Those are all vendor partners who have been vetted to have not only the interoperability piece, but also to have the security piece. Connecticut has a very stringent set of student data privacy laws, and if vendors won't commit to that student data privacy pledge here, it's just not a product that we are going to use in the district. We're very conscious of the digital footprint that our students are creating, and we do have K-12 We have student data responsibility lessons and digital citizenship that go are offered at every single level and are part of our curriculum. So both very important things that we take very seriously here in the district.
Yeah, it's cool, and you must have a good state superintendent because Connecticut's coming down with some good rules about that. Who is your state superintendent?
Well, currently our state.
Who is that?
Well, Dr. Miguel Cardona might have other things on his agenda right now, but currently he would still be our education commissioner.
So long as Dr. Cardona's agenda doesn't include taking sewer barb with him, we're all good.
That's all you need. That's all you need. He'll take somebody. He may take somebody. Who knows? This is really cool, though. I mean, to be in Meriden right now has got to be really, really cool if you're in the education world, I got to tell you. You guys are great, as always. We've got a lot covered here today. This is good stuff. I'm going to try to get in touch. Hey, Mark, can you send me the contact information or whoever for Ed Rising? I want to find out more about that.
Definitely. We'll send you that information, a great program. And I think long-term goal of that program will be to increase a diverse hiring of teachers. I do, you know, if you're a diverse
That's
district
good.
And you're getting students to be interested in careers in education, this is the way we'll really have a positive impact on minority teacher hiring.
Yeah, and actually I was talking to the folks at Phyllis Wolfram over there. She's the executive director of the Council of Administrators of Special Education, and they've got an all-out effort. This is interesting, to try to get more diversity into special education teachers, okay, particularly Latino and African-American folks, okay, because it's hard enough to find great special ed teachers. There are too few and far between. Okay, and they are so darn important, and we want to make them diverse as well. So there's a whole effort there, too. It's really an interesting world right now, and everybody's doing everything they can to make it work, especially in Meriden, Connecticut. Thank you all, the three of you. You're wonderful. I love you. You know that. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year to you.
Thanks
for having us on, Larry.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. You guys know that, okay? We'll have Hector on in just a few weeks as well, okay? One of our champions of equity, okay?
Terrific.
Sounds good.
That's good. Thanks, guys. I'll keep you appraised of that. Have a good week, good day, and a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I cut them off accidentally. Mark Benigni, Barb Hafner, and Susan Moore from Meriden School District in Connecticut, where Dr. Cardona currently resides. Okay, before he heads off to Washington. Well, pretty cool. I got to tell you, that is really, really neat. He started his career as a Meriden teacher. Really, really neat stuff. All right, we'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org. We invite everybody to go over and join with us in the never-ending fight for K-12 equity. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.